I'm not pulling out my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for the drive to work, coronavirus edition. So using my time at home to interview people. So today I have Daniel Holt, probably the most super fan, Kamigawa super fan in all of R&D. So hello, Daniel.
Hello.
Okay, so Daniel was on the vision design team, the set design team, the vision design team for Commander, the set design team for Commander, the exploratory world building team, the world building team, the art review for the main set and booster fun, and as always, he works on the UX, the frames and symbols. So, like, you did all of that, okay? So, let's talk a little bit about your love of Kamigawa.
Yeah, so it all started back when I started Magic. You know, I started playing back in 2004 with the original Champions of Kamigawa block. I think I got one draft of Fifth Dawn and a Mirrodin before it rotated. And then it was all Kamigawa all the time. And, you know, when you're a teenager, you can't just continue to get new product every weekend. So me and my friends would just hang out all the time and just use the cards we had on hand. And it was all Champions of Kamigawa block. So we would just rebuild decks and play those.
Okay, so what is your early... So when the set started, it wasn't even Kamigawa yet. So when you first got involved, it was for sure Japanese world, but not yet Kamigawa. So what got you involved in the first place? It wasn't even necessarily Kamigawa.
Yeah, so I've been pitching Kamigawa since the day I walked into the building. You know, our creative leads definitely got tired of me requesting that over and over. But we were in one meeting where we had the whole for this set, and they didn't know what they wanted there, and I pitched Kamigawa because it fit what we wanted. We wanted a bright, colorful world coming out of Innistrad and going into Streets of Nicopenna. And it didn't really take off. You know, they said, we'll think about Kamigawa, but let's explore another trope we've been wanting to test out, which is what you just said, the Japanese-inspired futuristic world. And then it eventually became Kamigawa because we didn't want to eat into Kamigawa's creative space if we chose that instead of a return to.
So one of the things that's really interesting is there are a lot of people, like when I talk to different people, like for example, I came into this, my blog had really hammered into me that there was an audience for Kamigawa. And mm-hmm. I know like I was looking out for like, okay, how could this be Kamigawa? And I know that a lot of different people were all like, could we make this Kamigawa? Like it's funny that behind the scenes, all these people are like, could this be Kamigawa? And then, so talk a little bit about, stuff you like, how did you help push it toward Kamigawa?
Yeah, the 1200 year gap really helped. You know, canonically, it's been 1200 years, it can kind of be whatever we need it to be. And you know, we set the tone of the set to be that tradition versus modernity. And there was even that kind of split in the building. You know, a lot of world building folks wanted to push it more tech, more cyber, where, you know, super fans like me were like, oh, I still want to make sure this is Kamigawa. I need my Kitsune, my Nozumi, and things like that. And I think we hit a nice blend there when we did push it. You know, we got the callbacks in the set that made it feel like Kamigawa. The setting is still Kamigawa, but it's a more modern era. And so everything just kind of fit into place.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how you, I mean, you being all of us, but how we got as much Kamigawa into the set as possible. Because I know you were a main driver of making the Kamigawa content as high as possible. So let's walk through sort of how you did that. So what are some of the things that were done?
Yeah, flavor. Let's start with flavor. A lot of the characters are dead. It's been 1,200 years. A lot of the mortals, you know, just aren't here anymore. So we got to lean on, you know, the Kami are immortal to a certain degree. So they're still here. You know, we got to do the dragon cycle. We got some Yojin callbacks. Kiyodai is still around. But then once we made sagas a thing, that really let us be like, oh, we can tell the stories of the past through the voices of today. And so the living historians are running around telling the stories of the past so that fans still get to hear about Toshiro Umezawa, about Machiko Kanda, Kikijiki Mirror Breaker is still in there. You know, just fan favorites all over. And we, in regards to the mechanics, we did explore, you know, bringing back a lot of them. The first day of set design, once you handed it off to Dave, I sat everybody down and we drafted Champions of Kamigawa. I wanted to kind of set the tone for set design. And, you know, we got to bring back things like ninjutsu and channel, whereas the other abilities didn't really fit, but we made some callbacks. You know, Discover the Impossible is a love letter to The Unspeakable, because I couldn't get the whole set in the cycle. The original Unspeakable being cast these three arcane spells and summon the Unspeakable.
Yeah, the Unspeakable gets referenced in a card. Like, one of the things that's really interesting is how much we managed to reference that. Like, not everything even was around anymore, but we can make references to things. And there were a lot of references to different cards. And I think that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Flavoring the sagas was one of my favorite things. You know, we did all the research in early world building where, you know, I read the 21 short stories we had available, the all three novels, and I just had a list of things I wanted to like shove in there. And every time Dave would make a new saga, I'd be like, okay, this could be this flavor. Let's tweak it a little so it fits, things like that.
So what was your favorite saga? Which saga are you like proudest of? What story are you proudest of getting in there?
Oh, man.
And you could have more than one answer. Doesn't have to be one.
Yeah, I mean, it's any of the big names. I think Toshiro Umezawa being one of my favorite characters from the set, him and Machiko Kanda. So getting them sagas was pretty, like, early on we got them, you know,
okay,
so Azusa and Kiki Jiki.
Yeah, so let me say, one of them is Life of Toshiro Umezawa, who's the main character of the original Champions Block. So it's a saga, one in a black. Choose one, so chapter one and two is choose one. Tiger creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn. Tiger creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. You gain 2 life. We'll talk about that in a second. Chapter 3 is exile this saga, then return it to the battlefield transformed under your control. And then on the backside, Memory of Toshira. It's a 2/3 enchantment creature, human samurai. Tap, pay 1 life, add black mana. Spend this mana only to cast an instant or sorcery spell. So let's talk about how this brought to life Toshira Umezawa.
Well, the front abilities may seem a little familiar from a card in the past that is a direct reference to Toshiro's Jitte, Umezawa's Jitte. I wish I was the one to say, let's put that on a card, but I'm pretty sure Ethan Plesher beat me to it and put it on there in the early card file. It just made sense, and it stuck since the day we put it on there. And then it flips into actual Toshiro's likeness. And my only request when we were designing that was that we make it work with the actual Toshiro Umezawa card, which is all about casting instants from your graveyard. So the fact that it taps to add black and does that.
And also,
also a 2/2.
We made it so all the backside of all of them are enchantment creatures, because that plays into the theme of our set of enchantments versus artifacts and stuff. So what was the other one you said? What was the other saga you said?
Machiko Kanda.
Okay.
Where
is it? The Fall of Lord Kanda?
Oh, that's actually one of my favorites.
Fall of Lord Kanda is 2 and a white. It's a saga, Champion Saga. Chapter 1, exile target creature an opponent controls with mana value 4 or greater. Chapter 2, each player gains control of all permanents they own. Chapter 3, exile the saga, then return to the battlefield transformed under your control. And then on the backside, it's Fragment of Kanda. 1 and a 3, enchantment creature, human noble, defender. When Fragment of Kanda dies, draw a card. Okay, yeah. so let's talk a little bit about Kanda.
this is the end of the novels. Kanda's punished for what he did, where he stole Kyodai from the spirit realm and just caused a lot of trouble for Kamigawa. So the first one is it exiles him. He was put into stone, and we made sure that this first ability hit the original Kanda, which is a 7 mana value creature. And then the second one shows Kyodai, second chapter, shows Kyodai being returned, you know, set free. You gain control of everything that was taken. And then it flips over and he's in his rock form, and he does get smashed at the end of the story. And that's what happens. You smash him and you draw your card.
Yeah, I should point out, by the way, something kind of clever that the original champions did is the main protagonist of it was a black character, in magic colors, and the main antagonist was a white character. So, like, normally a lot of people think of, like, white is good and black is evil, but we sort of put it on his head and kind of, like, the good guy was the black character and the bad guy was kind of the white character. I mean, though, once again, Kanda had his reasons for doing what he did. I mean, he thought he was doing good. Obviously, he was caused lots of problems, but...
And, you know, in the same way, Toshiro was kind of out for himself still. He was still very selfish in ways.
Okay, so was there a third saga? I think I went to the wrong side. Was there a third saga you were referencing?
Yeah, we can talk about Machiko's. The Reign of Machiko? Reign of Truth?
Oh, hold on.
I forget the actual name of it.
Reign of Truth. Oh, Machiko's Reign of Truth. So one and a white, Enchantment Saga. Chapter 1 and Chapter 2, target creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each artifact and or enchantment you control. Chapter 3, exile the saga, then return it to the battlefield, transformed under your control. The backside is Portrait of Machiko, enchantment creature, human noble. Portrait of Machiko gets +1/+1 for each artifact and or enchantment you control, and it's a 0/0 creature, so essentially its power toughness is equal to artifacts and enchantments. So what's going on here?
So this actually points to one of the mechanic or one of the things you teased in your article about an unnamed mechanic. This one it was called Balance in a lot of our testing, and it cares about having both artifacts and enchantments. It's kind of being that centerpiece of the war of tech versus tradition. And Machiko is becomes the emperor at the end of the story after her father Kanda's death. And she's hoping with Hiodai to help restore balance to the world. And that's kind of what this card is doing. You know, she's influencing with her reign and then tells the story of her becoming a symbol of balance.
Well, that's cool. I mean, one of the things that's neat is literally every saga in this set is telling, like all of them are referencing something from the original, from the original Champions block. And so that's kind of cool. Like one of the things that's really interesting for me and sort of my behind the scenes ploy to get us to Kamigawa was that the neat thing about new versus old is old means something if old's it actually is old, right? That we could have made a world where there's a new and there's an old and we just make up the old, but that doesn't have the same oomph of no, literally 20 years ago these things in real magic time happened. And I think that's why it's a lot of fun for me to sort of like we get to sort of look back much like they, the people of the world, look back. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, compare it to Kaldheim, where it's cool to get those deep, insightful lores of the sagas there. But it was our first time on Kaldheim. It's like everybody was learning about that lore for the first time. You come to Neon Dynasty and pick up a saga, you may just know the story because you played 18 years ago, personally. Yeah.
Okay, so other than the sagas, let's talk about some other ways all of us, imbued the set with more Kamigawa.
Oh, man. So all the like favorite creature types, like I mentioned earlier, are back. You know, they're the Kitsune, Moonfolk,
Let's go one at a time. Let's go one at a time. So let's start with the Kitsune. Let's talk Kitsune.
Kitsune are back. Lightpaws is one of the main characters at the Imperial Capital, working with the Emperor and originally Kaito. I actually found out from the art director, Zach Stella, that he commissioned this as a callback to 8.5 Tells, which all Kitsune have tells, but he specifically wanted the kind of look of the card to be a reference to that. 8.5 Tells being a popular fox commander from original Kamigawa.
So another fun thing, one of the things that we were always... So there were two parts of the set going on at once. So today we're talking a lot about sort of the ancient set, right? Look back, the Kamigawa references... Meanwhile, we were also, the other half of the set was doing something we hadn't done last time we were there. When Brady Dommermuth and the creative team did the original Champions, they really went into sort of Japanese mythology, Shinto, and a lot of like real world things, but things that were maybe not really well known by people outside of Japan or people who were fans of Japanese mythology. So one of the things we did in this set is we really take a look at pop culture, like Japan has a lot of very popular pop culture that the rest of the world has seen. And so one of the things we also looked at is, were there fun opportunities to make cool references? So like, as we talk the Kitsune, where is it? It's, what's the pilot? Oh, a hotshot mechanic, right? the fact that we can do fox pilots. In fact, there's a couple fox pilots, Kitsune Ace. That's something that just is making sort of subtle references to something that is a popular thing. And there's a lot of that is in the set too. So it was fun to find where we could take existing Kamigawa stuff and cross it with sort of cool references. So that also happens as well.
Right. It just still feels natural because it's, you know, flavored as Kamigawa.
Okay. So we talk Kitsune. Who do we want to talk next?
Let's do the Moonfolk.
Okay. So
just going Wooberg order.
Okay. Let's talk Moonfolk. So, what? So the Moonfolk were... So here's a challenge to the Moonfolk. in the original Kamigawa, in fact, this was true of most of the creatures, is we did a lot of one-for-one mechanics. So, for example, all the samurai had Bushido. All the ninja had ninjutsu. All the moon folk had a... You bounce land to your hand to, you know, generate effects. The snakes all locked you down. Like, there was a lot of one-for-one tying of mechanics. And I'll let people in on a secret. Not great design. It's very hard when everything of something has to do the same mechanical thing. It is very, very hard to I mean, you can do it a little bit, and if certain mechanics allow you to do it easier. The Moonfolk mechanic was not an easy mechanic to replicate. I think we did do one in the set.
I specifically requested this. It's Tameshi Reality Architect. I designed this legend to play well with the moonfolk.
Let me read that real quick so they know what it is.
Oh, yep, go
okay,
ahead.
Tameshi Reality Architect, 2 and a blue, legendary creature, moonfolk wizard, so 2/3. Whenever one or more non-creature permanents are returned to hand, draw a card. This ability triggers only once each turn. X and white, return a land you control to owner's hand, return target artifact or enchantment card with mana value X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate only as a sorcery.
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
So the first ability is what I really pitched. I was like, hey, let's get something that triggers when you return lands to your hand. But originally, it was just anything. Like, let's make a bounce commander, basically. So it also would work with ninjutsu. I was just trying to get a good slot in the set. And Dave's like, no, that's interesting enough on its own. Let's make the cool second ability that goes with the first and still plays well with the moonfolk. So now it is just non-creature permanents, but still works with the original moonfolk.
And yeah, the moonfolk were interesting in that a lot of the creature types, like, we had them in the set, but they were, we picked the animal they were closest to. So, you know, fox or rat or snake or whatever. But moonfolk, we actually made a creature type. Like, moonfolk is its own creature type because I guess we, like, felt they weren't close enough to something. Like, we didn't call them...
rabbit.
Yeah, they weren't quite rabbit, so we didn't call them rabbit.
That's fair.
But yeah, it is, I know that... It's funny, when I went to the... So, when we... I knew we were doing the set, but the audience didn't know this yet. On my blog, people ask questions all the time. So, I'm constantly asking questions. Mm-hmm. So, the audience doesn't necessarily know what I'm asking and I care versus when I'm just curious. So, I actually asked, what... If we did Kamigawa, because Return to Kamigawa was a big theme on my blog, what's the most important thing to come back? And the number one answer, by actually a decent margin, was the races. The specific races.
Yep.
Okay, so we talked Moonfolk. So let's go to Black. The Nozumi.
Yep. What do you want to talk about here? There's a lot of good ones. You know, we finally see Nashi on a card. Let's talk about him.
Okay, let's talk about... Oh, hold on. Let me read Nashi's card. Okay, Nashi, Moon Sage. Nashi, Moon Sage's Scion. 1 black-black. Legendary creature, Rat Ninja, 3/2. Ninjutsu for 3 and a black. Whenever Nashi Moon Sage's Scion deals combat damage to a player, exile the top card of each player's library. Until end of turn, you may play one of those cards. If you cast a spell this way, pay life equal to the mana value rather than paying its mana cost. Okay, so who's Nashi? Why is he here?
So we actually met Nashi in a Aether Revolt story where a Johnny goes to visit Tamiyo. And we find out Nashi is this adopted Nozumi son of Tamiyo because... Nashi's village was destroyed by Tezzeret, and his parents were killed, and it's really tragic. But she takes him in, raises him as her own, and there's just a loving connection there. And so we wanted to give him a character. And he actually played a much larger role in the story, the original story pitch. I think he did a lot of what Kaito was doing in the final story, but we realized canonically he was just a little too young for that, I think. I think he's around like 12 or so, and a little dangerous endeavor Kaito gets in, so we shifted the character focus there.
Okay, so we get to Red. Red was...
The Aki.
The Aki, yeah, okay. Our goblins.
My favorite card in the set. Yeah, Goro Goro.
Okay, so let's talk Goro Goro. Give me a second. Okay, so Goro Goro, disciple of Rusai?
Ryusei.
1 and a red, 2/2, legendary creature, goblin samurai. Red activation, creatures you control gain haste until end of turn. Three red, red activation. Create a 5/5 red dragon spirit creature token with flying. Activate only if you controlled an attacking modified creature and equipment or as you control it, counters or modifications.
Yeah, this little guy I pitched was a disciple of Ryusei. This is before we knew that the dragons were going to be reborn. So in my head, Ryusei was still here. He makes a 5/5 to mimic Ryusei. And then we found out they were being reborn. And I was like, can we actually keep this? Like, it's actually really funny if this goblin is still worshiping a dragon that isn't around anymore. And so Creative really rolled with it. And they made him follow at Sushi, the new red, new reborn red dragon, still singing worship to Ryusei. And Atsushi just tolerates him because Atsushi gets enough things of value as a tribute to them.
Okay, so the last creature type, the most controversial one here, we'll talk about it, is the snake folk. So let's talk about the Orochi.
Yeah.
So, okay, first of all, let me explain what the controversy was. So in the original version of Champs of Kamigawa Block, the Orochi had six appendages, two of which were legs. And there was a lot of... when we first talked about going back, it was the one race that we were talking about maybe having died off because the snake with legs was not very popular within the world building team. And we eventually decided to come back and they lost their legs. I'm not even sure the explanation of the story, but it's 1,200 years later and somehow they evolved.
There's a saga for that.
Oh, what's the saga for that?
Teachings of the Kirin.
Teachings.
Well, you pull that up.
Okay.
There was a decision that had to be made about if the Orochi were returning or not. I was certainly on the side fighting for them to return because, some people just love them as a favorite creature type. But because of the artistic choices, we just didn't know. We didn't even know going into concept push. The art director was trying to lean another way, and we were testing both at the same time. Eventually, we decided, hey, let's just cosmetically change them a little. They've evolved over time, like you're about to read in the saga. And they did stick, but... another creature type that came out of it was the Nantuko Orchid Mantis creature. It's one card in the set. Zach Stella loved it so much that he put it on the rare ninja card.
Okay, so Teachings of the Kirin, one in a green. Chapter one, this is Enchantment Saga. Chapter one, mill three cards, create a 1/1 colorless spirit creature token. Chapter two, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. Chapter three, exile the saga, then turn to the battlefield transformed under your control. And then it's Kirin Touched Orochi, enchantment creature, snake monk, 1/1. Whenever Kirin Touched Orochi attacks, choose one. Exile target creature card from a graveyard. When you do, create a 1/1 colorless spirit creature token. Or exile target non-creature card from a graveyard. When you do, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. So what story is being told here?
Okay, this is a weird saga. It's actually a mesh of two. There's an original story about the five monocolor Kirin. They're having a meeting, and they talk about how they interfere with mortal lives. They're just all telling these like ghost stories almost around the campfire of, oh, I did this before to a mortal, and ha, ha, ha. So they're really like, they meddle a lot. So the first side is making the spirit, and then it meddles with something. But then the back side is actually an opportunity we took to tell the story of how a Kirin... and the spirits touched the Orochi because the Orochi were kicked from the Jukai forest just like everyone else when Tawashi was spread, the city was spreading so much and the spirits were angry. But the Orochi started losing their powers, and to get a connection back to the forest and to their magic, they were like, hey, we'll offer anything you want, all this stuff. And the spirits didn't really believe them, so they tested. They're like, hey, give us your arms and your legs. And they're like, oh, take everything. We don't care. And they're like, oh, you really want this? And I'm summarizing really quick, obviously. But they eventually just gave them this new form of the long tail, but they still have their arms. And now they're more connected to the forest like they once were.
So I can see my desk from here. So we're wrapping up. So I want to get to a few final stories before we finish. So is there any other thing from Kamigawa that you had to make sure happened in the set that you did?
Oh man, we covered a lot of it. I think it had to feel like Kamigawa. Every card has to be like, okay, I know what setting I'm on. I care about this. The story ended up so much cooler than I expected when I was proofreading that. You know, Grace Fong and Emily Tang led a lot of efforts there. The callbacks is really what had to do it. You know, it's been 1,200 years. That's my final answer. We had to get references to the original characters that people knew from 18 years ago in our time, but 1,200 years ago in canon. That I'm glad we hit a nice solution for that with the sagas.
Yeah, like I said, it was one of the big challenges was 1,200 years later. Like, I remember we sat in a meeting, we're like, who would still be alive? Like, what possible, you know, like, okay, you know, it's magic, so they're magical creatures, and some last some time. But 1,200 years is a long time. So, you know, and then we even said, okay, are there ancestors? Or, you know, like, how do we make reference to? And then we had done this before in Dominaria, right? When we had gone to Dominaria, Dominaria has a long history of magic, just, you know, as well. And so we did a lot of callbacks in Dominaria. And so I think we learned some techniques there, we applied here. And then, right, we had some new technology that we applied as well to try to get it. And but it's funny, I think sagas were designed in Dominaria because we knew we needed to talk about the past, and then it ended up being the same tool we needed to tell about the past. So,
yeah.
Okay, so one last story I want to talk about here, since this is a controversial story, is Tamiyo. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about... So the interesting thing, and I mentioned this before, is we knew that Tamiyo was going to be completed, like, super early. Like, I think before, like, we knew it was Kamigawa, we knew she was going to get completed, right?
It was pretty early on. It might have come shortly. I don't know which one actually came first. Man, that's probably been the hardest secret about, like, it's been hard to keep Kamigawa coming back bottled up, like, in my social media, with my friend circles. It's been real hard. But then, like, knowing also Tamiyo is going to be completed, like, just on top of it.
Yeah, so my memory is, I'm pretty sure we knew that before I started Vision Design. Like, I believe that was a known thing. Like, when we started Vision Design, my big thing at the time was, okay, let's decide later whether it's Kamigawa. Let's just make an awesome Japanese-inspired set, and then we'll come back to the question, is it Kamigawa? But we knew it was Tamiyo. I think there's a point where we re-examined it, like, oh, does it have to be Tamiyo? And looked at other options. But it turned out, like, the other options were, like, Tezzeret makes no sense. And, you know, like, we just introduced Kato, so he's a brand new character. And
Wanderer.
And the Wanderer, we just had this giant reveal already for the Wanderer. So, like, two big reveals didn't make sense. And so, like, it just, none of the other, like, and the other big thing about it is, from a storytelling standpoint, is, like, look, this was a big moment. We needed the audience to care. It needed to be something that was endemic to this world. Like, it felt weird to bring a character that had nothing to do with Kamigawa and then change that character. That didn't feel right. So,
And remember what I was saying earlier? Nashi was originally one of the main characters involved with the story. It was so much more gut-wrenching for Nashi to be there when Tamiyo gets captured and completed. Like, that was one of the original story pitches. That was rough.
Yeah, I think it's interesting is, right, we had pitched early on, we liked the, we had wanted to find a home for a ninja planeswalker, something, I mean, for years had been on our, like, could we possibly find a place to do this? And then, like, well, if we're going back to Kamigawa, like, yeah, that seems like the place to do it, so I'm happy that finally happened. So any last thoughts? We're wrapping up here. Any final thoughts about Kamigawa as or Neon Dynasty as a set?
Yeah, I'm glad we finally got to go back. This was such a huge passion project, you know, slaving over it for two, three years. I still feel like it's not out the door, even though it's releasing in a week or two. but I'm glad we have a new modern Kamigawa to reference for in the future. Like, maybe it won't be 18 years before we go back again. Maybe in supplemental products we get some more nods to it a little more frequently than we got things like Okagachi and Yuriko and those side products. It's just, it's more accessible now that we've spent the time to visualize what it looks like in modern day.
Yeah, and one of the things I get asked this in the audience a lot right now, which is, I've constantly said how hard it was to go back to Kamigawa just because the first one didn't do well. And they're like, well, if this one does well, does that make it easier to go back? And like 100% it makes it easier to go back, you know, like... Whenever when I'm going to the higher ups and pitching something like Kamigawa, like they look at the last Kamigawa, but if this one's successful, we pointed this one and they go, okay. So success breeds repetition, as I like to say. So it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, the fans' reaction is probably my favorite part. It's so heartwarming to see everyone loving the set, new and old. They love the throwbacks. They love all the new stuff they're seeing. It's just, it's really nice to see this work finally paying off.
Yeah, I got a tweet a couple days ago, or maybe it was on my blog. Maybe it was a post on my blog. And the person said, look, I'll be honest. I hated the old Kamigawa. I had no interest in coming back to Kamigawa. I was upset when you said we were going to make Kamigawa. But now that I've seen the set, I love it. So, the fan response has been awesome, and so that's great. I mean, I'm not even as big a Kamigawa fan as you, but it is exciting to see the fans all excited. And like I said, this was the number one request on my blog, so it is nice to be able to finally, like, after years and years of saying it'll never happen. I mean, I for years said, guys, it's never going to happen. And then I had to keep saying it's never going to happen since I knew it was going to happen. But I had to continue as not to change my story. So.
We can't leak it anymore. That's probably the best part. That's the biggest relief.
Yeah. By the way, when something big happens and you want to tell people, but you can't, and you have to wait for 2 years before you can tell people. This has been my life forever, so I'm used to it. But it is so nice when you can finally tell people. So I always get excited the night before a big release when we're finally telling people something. I'm so excited to see the audience reaction to it. So, and I'm sure like the day before we announced Kamigawa, you were just waiting to see. So,
oh yeah.
But anyway, I am at my desk, so we all know what that means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So I want to thank you for being with us, Daniel.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And for all you, I will see you next time. Bye bye.